threatened his breakfast, looking beyond the plaza up to the snow-covered mountains. There was an area of rutted land dotted with elegant cottonwoods that tilted toward a narrow river. Lion's eye was caught by millions of tiny ice crystals falling from the cloudy sky, glittering like a mist of diamonds.
Enough.
He started to walk slowly back toward the main street and the warmth and security of the war wags. Ryan felt the short hairs bristling at his nape as he looked around at the square of the dead. The dried out bodies were moving.
Holy shit.
Everywhere he looked, there was a restless shifting, fingers creaking open from clenched fists, feet scratching in the frosty dust, teeth clacking and leering jaws, skulls turning blindly from side to side. Ryan drew his gun. His senses screamed for him to run from the charnel site, but his feet felt nailed to the dirt. Something touched his ankle.
Huh?
He looked down, seeing that the tiny, shrunken hands of the baby with the slit throat were plucking at his ankle. As the mist thickened, making it impossible to see what was happening in the Matrans unit, the partly open door was the center of a swirling vortex of gray air, peculiarly thick, like gruel. Ryan lay unconscious, his face close to the opening, one arm jammed against the door. The process continued. The side effects of the malfunctioning jump struck at everybody, but Ryan was nearest to the nodal point of the matter transfer dyschronicity, and was, as a consequence, much the worst affected. But his living nightmare was not the only one. Dean was wandering across a bleak and featureless moor, with every upslope coated thick in snow. The air was so cold that it burned his mouth and throat. The inside of his nose was coated with sharp crystals of ice. He was very tired, overwhelmed with the desire to lie down and rest for a while. He hadn't eaten for the better part of a week. He could feel his backbone rubbing on his belly. The sun was nearly done, throwing his long shadow ahead of him as he staggered weakly eastward. A tiny bird, like a sparrow, suddenly fell from the sky, landing in the snow at his feet, stricken dead by the cold.
Yes!
Dean dropped to his knees alongside the tiny corpse, picking it up in cupped hands and staring at the dark, sightless eyes. He could just feel the warmth on the feathered body. Closing his own eyes, the boy lifted the dead bird toward his mouth. The bowl of rice pudding was rich and creamy, dotted with plump raisins and carrying the scent of honey and cinnamon. It stood on the floor of the wooden shack, steaming in the bitter cold. JB sat cross-legged, looking at it, wondering which of the guards had placed it there while he was sleeping. The irons around his ankles were frozen, scorching his flesh wherever they touched it. There were people outside. Dimly, against the stark whiteness of the snow that lay thick upon the rocky plateau, JB could make out the silhouettes of some of his guards, waiting to snigger at him when he tried to reach the tantalizing dish of food. They knew the chain around his throat, secured to a heavy ring bolt in the wall, would leave him short, inches away from the bowl.
Fuck you.
JB sat very still, unable to take his eyes off the creamy pudding.
Shit.
The walking dead were all around Brian. Every empty eye socket turned blankly toward him. The wind blew at the tattered clothing, whistling through the shrunken holes in the dried flesh. Step by slow, unsteady step, the corpses were coming closer.
Oh, fuck it.
He leveled the Lama Comanche at the nearest of the shambling horrors. Mildred had been on vacation with some of the other members of the Olympic pistol team, staying in a newly built block of apartments near Pagosa Springs. The nearest shooting range was at South Fork, the far side of Wolf Creek Pass, nearly 11,000 feet high. This afternoon, Mildred had gone off on a trek of her own, borrowing a jeep to take the twisting narrow trail into the San Juan Mountains toward Cimarron. There had been no forecast of the snow that suddenly came swirling around her, closing visibility to 20 feet. It was like driving into an endless white tunnel.
radio.
As she reached down to try to adjust the radio, the heavy-duty tires of the Jeep struck a tumbled log, jarring the wheel from her numbed fingers. The vehicle lurched to one side, off the ice-slick trail, and started to roll. The Jeep started tumbling over and over, bouncing and jolting. Something struck her behind her right ear. The darkness opened its cloak and took her in. When she came around, there was an eerie stillness. She opened her eyes, a savage stab of pain running through her skull. She reached up and touched her face, feeling the cool stickiness of congealing blood across her cheek.
Damn! Oh.
Her careful probing made her fairly sure that there was no life-threatening damage done by the crash. There was a large duck egg swelling where something had come loose from the back of the Jeep in the accident and clouded her across the head.
Okay. Could be worse, girl.
She tried to move out of the wrecked Jeep. The seatbelt was tight across her ribs and shoulders, holding her suspended in the inverted vehicle.
Uh-oh.
A broken pine branch had smashed through the driver's window, pinning her against the back of the seat. She wriggled experimentally. Nothing happened. She was completely trapped. Snow was blowing in on her face. From her position, it was impossible to reach the release on the seatbelt, though she tried hard. She was suddenly aware of cold liquid trickling across her chest.
Gas.
Jack had been tracking the big Mutey Cougar for 3 days and 2 nights. He and his wife Christina had been losing stock from their New Mexico spread since late October. Now Christmas was only a few days off, and every dawning brought a fresh trail of bright blood and the ragged remains of one of their sheep. He had a satin-finished Colt Python holstered on his hip, and several of his beloved throwing knives concealed about him. But they weren't the right weapon for a cougar whose spore showed he was close to 20 feet from nose to tail. The Winchester 78 bolt-action rifle was a good, reliable hunting rifle, with its chrome molybdenum steel action and narrow serrated trigger. It had a hooded ramp front sight with a white diamond leaf rear sight for quick adjustment. Jack was carrying it at high port, ready for action, his white fingers gripping the dark walnut stock with its high comb Monte Carlo undercut cheek piece. His backpack, containing provisions, was weighing perilously light. The animal had led him up into a maze of meandering snow-covered canyons. Jack had a wonderful sense of direction, but the swirling blizzard was robbing him of that, and he was no longer certain which way was home. His streaming mane of white hair was coated with crystals of powdery snow and ice. He squeezed between a large rounded boulder and the sheer wall of rock that lined the arroyo on his right. Jack continued to pick his way after the cougar, pausing when he saw the tracks. He glanced behind him, feeling a momentary discomfort, then stooped to examine the trail. They were both human and animal. Combat boots and mountain lion. His own boots and the Mutey Cougar.
Oh, shit.
He'd been walking in a blind circle through the canyon. The cougar's tracks overlaid his own boot marks. The animal was following him.
Oh.
Christy lay on the bunk in the dark cabin under the two threadbare blankets. The oil lamp had given out so long ago that she couldn't remember, and the wood for the fire had been exhausted about 3 days earlier. When Ryan hadn't come back from his trading trip to the villa across the big river, and the snows had closed in on their little home, Christy had begun to ration the food that remained, gradually cutting down what she ate each day. Her ribs had begun to protrude through her skin, and she could see the sharp planes of her face changing in the broken square of mirror that hung above the sink in the kitchen. Her bright, sentient hair was dull, clinging miserably to her head. In the cupboard, there was a thumbnail of dried cheese left and a handful of oats. She was weak, and Ryan wasn't coming back. She had two choices, lie still and starve, or get up on her feet, pull on a coat and her dark blue western boots, open the cabin door, and try to make it to the ville. Uncle Tyus McCann had once told